From Altoona to Westchester, Windber to Beaver Falls, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, should the recreational use of marijuana be legal in Pennsylvania? The Wolf administration appears poised to push for legalization. Dan Bartkowiak of the Pennsylvania Family Institute is here to discuss the impact. Inspiring students who plan a career in writing is the mission of the student author movement. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Larry Wasser in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And reforms to the state's criminal justice system were enacted in the last session of the General Assembly, but more work remains to be done. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Dan Bartkowiak in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Crafting of the 2019-2020 Pennsylvania state budget is in the home stretch as legislators work toward a June 30th deadline for a new fiscal plan to be in place. The process normally brings hordes of lobbyists to the state capitol, but the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, a left-wing group, has taken to paying folks with a $50 Visa gift card to participate in a so-called day of action to push progressive policies. This drew an attack from the Republican State Party, which said the astroturfing was a, quote, prime example of people making a lot of noise, but their causes have not a lot of support. Conservative groups have filled the Capitol with activists on issues ranging from support of gun rights to tighter restrictions on abortion without resorting to paying people to attend. Natural gas production in Pennsylvania grew by 14.7% in the first quarter, compared to a similar time frame last year. Pennsylvania is the second highest gas-producing state in the nation. We trail only Texas. According to the Independent Fiscal Office, there were 8,765 producing horizontal wells in the state in the first quarter of 2019. That's an increase of 10.7% over the first quarter of 2018. Natural gas production and spin-off industries have been a major driver of economic expansion in Pennsylvania for the past few years, and with new plants and pipelines scheduled to come online in the coming months, that growth is expected to continue. Pennsylvania has a new member of Congress. Fred Keller was sworn into office this past week after having won a special election last month to fill the 12th congressional district seat, which became open in January with the resignation of former Congressman Tom Marino. Keller won the sprawling district centered around Williamsport by a decisive 70-30% margin, besting even President Trump's solid win in the district in 2016. Keller will serve the remainder of Marino's term. He will stand for re-election next year, as will all members of the U.S. House of Representatives. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has concluded a series of town hall meetings to discuss the potential legalization of recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania. The debate now moves to the state legislature. Dan Bartkowiak is communications director at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. He has looked into the problems that have developed in states that have legalized marijuana for recreational use. He is here to talk about it. Dan, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Dan, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has been all around Pennsylvania for months now holding his so-called listening tour, attempt to discern, if he hasn't already done so, whether or not Pennsylvanians are ready for the legalization of recreational marijuana. Tell us a little bit about the listening tour. What were the takeaways from it?
I think you point out with really the so-called listening tour. I think that's a key point because, you know, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman has a very public opinion on where he stands and where he believes Pennsylvania should go. And he campaigned saying he wants to go full-on Colorado in Pennsylvania with the commercialization of marijuana. And it was disingenuous when you look at the listening tour. I attended the first tour date in Harrisburg and even brought up a quote that he has said about marijuana. And he interrupted to say, oh, I'm not saying any. And he tried to just have this kind of neutrality when it came to the issue. And he didn't just own his own opinion on this tour. So it's really disingenuous when you look at the listening tour, quote unquote, that he took when it comes to this issue. He absolutely wants to see the commercialization of marijuana in Pennsylvania. And he really used this, using taxpayer dollars to fund it, to really help that cause, really trying to steer Pennsylvania in a way to join in this really bad initiative to try to see this type of drug legalized throughout the state, throughout every community in Pennsylvania, and the problems that that would make.
Well, last year when he was running for office, Governor Tom Wolf opined that Pennsylvanians were not yet ready for the legalization of marijuana. It would appear the governor either has or is on the verge of changing his mind, assumedly, if it hadn't been made up already. So you have this push, Dan, from the top, from the administration, that is coming to legalize recreational marijuana in the General Assembly. What is the lay of the land there? Have bills been introduced to push us toward legalization? And what's your early read on where the House and Senate stack up on this issue?
I guess to initially point out, I know with Governor Wolf was pointing at some neighboring states to say, yeah, we should look to pursue this. And what I bring up is, you know, we have states like New Jersey and New York that were considering the legalization and commercialization of marijuana, and those efforts have stalled. You really have seen, once you start looking at this issue and see the what the effects of commercialization would bring, these industries that would come in and spend a ton of money to try to target these individuals to get hooked on this drug and the impacts that has on families and children, it's starting to become known and people are speaking out on it. So those efforts right now have stalled. And so that does impact, I think, with regard to Pennsylvania. We do have legislation in both the House and Senate that have been introduced to essentially go full-on Colorado to bring this drug into every community and commercialize it. It's certainly cause for concern. We have a system in place with regards to medical marijuana that still is trying to figure out some of the problems with it. And it's a drug that frankly needs to be studied more. We need to learn more about what marijuana really is. The science really isn't there right now. The more I look into this issue, the more problems I see with regards to states like Colorado and the impact that this is having there. There's many harms on communities when this is just fully legalized and not having really much parameters to it.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Dan. Colorado was the first state. A number of other states have followed. I guess you mentioned most recently Illinois. And the states that have been doing this now for a number of years that have legalized marijuana and they have several years' worth of a track record now, what sort of problems are they experiencing?
When people think about marijuana, you might think of just a small joint somebody did in high school, and you know, often you could think of, you know, some that in the Woodstock days, you know, your Woodstock weed. This is far different from that type of mentality. One example I could bring up is I just read yesterday a traffic stop in Fraser Township. It's in Allegheny County, where the police took on someone that was bringing in about 1,000 these oil pods, and it's a high potency THC oil pod. It's used for vaping, and it had a 95% THC potency. That's something that no one needs. When you look at the potency levels of marijuana and this THC content, that's what we're seeing. So when you look at someone like Colorado, you have so many dispensaries. There's over 1,000 dispensaries throughout the state that are selling edibles. It could be gummy bears. It could be cookies. These THC-infused products. Almost think of any type of product, and there's going to be a THC-infused product. And the problems that that causes, especially when you look at a younger age, the science is pretty clear that's starting to analyze this, is the younger that you start marijuana, the worse you're going to have later on in life. The implications on your growing brain and the impacts that marijuana, especially on the THC side of things, can have on you, especially at a young age, are concerning. And what you're seeing in Colorado are many issues when it comes to teen use, you know, when it comes to public safety. The marijuana is the number one in crimes and offenses in public schools. It's like double the next offense. You have issues of ER visits. You know, they're starting to see a dramatic increase in ER visits and poison control visits, especially when it comes to kids, you know, 1 to 14 age, they're seeing a spike in that. So when you look at some of these really ramifications when it comes to just full-on legalizing it, there are definitely implications, whether it's with these young children, you're seeing an increase in deadly car crashes. Market, the black market that's in, you know, Colorado is booming, you know, despite legalization. There's just, again, the more I look into Colorado, the more I see of problems that are occurring in that state.
We are talking with Dan Bartkowiak, who is the Director of Communications at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. We are talking about the potential legalization of recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania, the impact that that could have. And Dan, another area where there is an impact is when it comes to the ability of users to gain employment. And what we have seen as a result of the Trump economy really roaring along is many employers are finding it difficult to find qualified employees or even unqualified employees to train in order to fill available jobs, particularly in manufacturing, Dan. It's important that those who are working on a factory floor are fully alert and aware of what it is they're doing, because it's a dangerous, oftentimes dangerous occupations. What impact do you see, or have we seen in other states, when it comes to potential employees being able to pass drug tests and then be able to go on and actually hold jobs?
Sure. Well, certainly one impact is just in companies finding people that will do the job. I point at Colorado, again, as just an example to show. And GE Johnson, the largest construction company in Colorado, they are finding that so many are failing their pre-employment drug tests that they have to look for construction workers outside the state. So they're trying to just actively recruit workers, and they can't find them in Colorado because many are failing the drug test. The concern is just trying to, one, find people that can do the job. I think also there's an element that people are thinking marijuana is not a dangerous drug, but there's nothing that should just be normal and normalized throughout our communities. And it's frankly, it's a drug that has implications on your mental state and can have serious impacts. You know, we're starting to see studies that have a link to psychosis and schizophrenia. And so, again, the science still is in need of trying to investigate this. But you're having places like New York City passing laws that say an employer can't run a drug test to hire someone. You know, there's implications with regards to a policy or a mindset that thinks marijuana is there's no harm, that this is something that should just be normal. There's definitely effects with regards to the legalization of marijuana and what this can do, both from an employee standpoint and an employer hiring those that perhaps are using this drug.
Dan Bartkowiak is the Director of Communications at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Dan, tell us a little bit about the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Also, where can folks go on the web to learn more about this issue?
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, Pennsylvania Family Institute is a nonprofit organization based in Harrisburg. I've been here for 30 years, and we look to strengthen families. You know, we're trying to aid families across the state in trying to strengthen, and especially when it comes to different policies, trying to engage folks in how we can best help families throughout the state. Our website's pafamily.org. Again, pafamily.org. And you can call us as well to chat as well, 1-800-FAMILY-1.
Dan Bartkowiak of the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Dan, thank you for taking time to be here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Middle school is the time when many students start to develop an interest in specific careers. To that end, the Student Author Movement is working to inspire and mentor budding writers. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Larry Wasser of the Student Author Movement in this week's Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Larry, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Share with the listeners for a moment what they need to know about the Student Author Movement project.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, Student Author Movement, I'm the project leader for this effort. We are a nonprofit, and our main focus is driving reading and, more importantly, writing and creativity into middle schools. And our focus is Title I schools. Many of the people listening may know about Title I, but let me cover that quickly. Title I schools are those schools identified by the U.S. government that have significant achievement gaps. Those achievement gaps can be varied, and they provide extra funding to those schools to close those gaps. So think of it as mainly grades, graduation rates, and things like that. We, in looking at people's efforts, we've seen a big gap in people trying to address Title I schools, and there's literally 15,000 of them throughout the United States, so there's a tremendous opportunity there. So Title I schools seem to have very low PTA, PTO organizations, and that's also a gap because those PTOs, PTAs usually try to bring in external speakers to help younger students try to get more creative and to enjoy reading and writing, and that creates this dilemma that we're trying to work on.
As you help close a gap for these Title I schools, how does your program accomplish that?
We try to do what we call author visits. Okay, so an author visit is instead of having, you know, the regular teacher that's trying to, you know, drill things into students' heads, we bring a published author that's published external children's books, and they come into the school, obviously with assistance from principals and teachers, and they have a very active workshop for middle schoolers. Now, can you imagine how chaotic that could be? They're absolutely fun to look at and watch how these students interact. But we basically try to drive these students to understand why reading is important and actually create small mini projects where they get a chance to write, we called it flash fiction, where they get to write a very short story in their own words with even some tips on how to illustrate. And that gets them very actively involved.
So the students at these schools are like students at any other school. They lack inspiration, maybe. They lack direction. And by bringing a guest into the program, you're able to focus them. And ultimately, what does that help them do in life?
Well, here's one of the biggest things that we've seen has been successful. So we have all these students write these flash fictions. So they get to take it home to their parents or siblings. And that's great. That gets them started on their own journey. But we also kind of create a little bit of a competition where, and we tell them this up front, we're going to review each one of those flash fictions, and the best one from that school, we're basically going to assist them, of course, with their guardians or parents' permission, okay, to publish a book. And that's going to be a short story book, usually 30 or 40 pages, with illustrations. And right now, we've done 10 books in the last year, and those 10 books we have published. And the way we work that is we publish those books at our own cost, no cost to the parent or to the student, and those books can now be purchased by anybody literally in the world because we can work through Amazon or sell them ourselves. The creativity that drives is absolutely incredible because obviously that single student is just the moon and the stars in their view. They just so get so excited. And we've seen some incredible celebrations at schools where when that book gets published, they have a gigantic auditorium. They have press inside so people can see that any 10th or 11-year-old could sit there and actually publish a book. It's pretty exciting.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Larry Wasser, the project leader for Student Author Movement. Larry, for who did it occur that this was going to be a good idea? What was the inspiration for this organization?
Well, it's kind of a blend, and I'll try to make this real short. I'm a heavy STEM person myself. When my daughter was going to college, when she went to a pretty significant college in Pennsylvania, she noticed that most of her upper graduate sophomores and juniors couldn't write papers. So here she was, heavy engineering, math type of person. She was assisting higher grade persons in her school in being creative and writing papers. Blend that with a close friend of mine, okay, that is a student author and was writing books on his own and publishing them successfully. He has three. And we literally had he's a neighbor, literally a curbside discussion of, hey, is there something we can do so these students, when they get to college, don't have this problem of not liking to read, not liking to write, and not being able to write? And that's where it got started.
How have you assessed the improvement that it brings to the student?
Our internal monitoring is number of schools that we visited. Okay, we're over 35 so far. And our average attendance is somewhere about 200. It varies dramatically from school to school, but just use 200. So there you can do the number of people we've seen and demonstrated to them this capability. We've already published 10 books. We believe, based upon our pipeline, we'll be publishing another 30 in the calendar, school calendar year coming up. So that's a tremendous number of students that now have seen this effort. We believe pure impact on number of schools, over 35, 200 plus students at each one, and then 30 published books upcoming, along with the 10 we've already done, is a great success for a startup, a nonprofit that we've created.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program, and my guest today is Larry Wasser, the project leader for an organization called Student Author Movement. Larry, if people would like to get more information about your organization, how can they find you?
Probably the best thing to do with full information is our website is just studentauthormovement.org that has listing of the program, introductions of myself and Mr. Stephen Kozan, ways to donate, also a frequently answered questions. We also have a Facebook page that people can look up some information to. And obviously, on our contact information, they can email to me direct. It's Larry@studentauthormovement.org, and I can quickly answer any questions that they have.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. Again, my guest is Larry Wasser, the project leader of the Student Author Movement. Larry, we wish your organization much success. The program sounds very interesting. Thank you for being a guest.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate the time.
Back to you, Loman.
Looking to build on reforms enacted into law last year, legislators in Harrisburg are considering additional changes to the state's criminal justice system. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this American Radio Journal commentary.
It's June, and if you pay attention to the news being reported from the state Capitol building, you're hearing a lot about the state budget. Maybe not as much in past years. There's no sexy deficit to report on in the state budget this year. In fact, there's a modest surplus. Some of that surplus is due to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that passed through Congress. Some of it is smoke and mirrors. Several years ago, a budget was passed after borrowing $1.5 billion to fill a recurring deficit. That bill is now coming due, $150 million of the $907 million surplus. While the legislative leaders bargain for what is being sold as a non-controversial budget, there are many issues we'd like to see get some movement in the next month. First, there are several criminal justice reform bills that will make it easier for individuals to get back to work and to their lives after they get out of prison, and also ensure that our communities are still safe in the process. House Bill 1555 will improve probation and parole in Pennsylvania by ensuring that lower-risk probationers and parolees do not stay under community supervision any longer than necessary, and that fewer people return to prison through revocations when other options are available. Americans for Prosperity believes that helping more people successfully complete their terms of probation and parole will make our communities safer and help more people reach their potential. House Bill 1555 provides incentives that reward good behavior under community supervision. The bill allows defendants to earn time credits toward their supervision period for complying with their assigned conditions, as well as for earning a high school diploma or obtaining professional certification. The bill also expands review opportunities for courts to terminate community supervision early or reduce conditions for defendants who have shown themselves to be lower risk and ready to return to society. Additionally, the bill will help reduce unnecessary revocations for technical violations, an important driver of incarceration that, in too many cases, is an unnecessary way of dealing with former inmates' behavior. House Bill 1555 ensures that in revocation hearings, courts use sufficiently high evidence standards, give defendants access to counsel, and adopt a presumption that other combinations of supervision conditions or treatment should be considered before return to prison is ordered. This gives courts additional flexibility to tailor any necessary sanctions to the individual in question and avoid the taxpayer burden and harm to the individual if prison is not necessary. We ask people to do something with their lives once they're released from prison, but we make it so difficult for them to do so. As an example, licensing boards frequently deny work licenses to returning citizens over past convictions unrelated to the profession they are trying to enter. This wastes taxpayer dollars as state correctional institutions regularly train inmates in professional skills, only for the person to be subsequently denied a license to practice. Worse, it's a waste of potential worker ready to help supercharge our economy. The 21st century presents enough challenges for Pennsylvanians trying to improve their lives, and burdensome and irrelevant occupational licenses just make things harder. Depriving a group of people the opportunity to get licensed makes things even worse. The occupational licensing reform would open doors to opportunity for folks across Pennsylvania and help recognize returning citizens for what they are, wells of untapped potential. By limiting work restrictions on Pennsylvanians with criminal records to situations where the crime directly relates to the job in question, Senate Bill 637 and House Bill 1477 strike the right balance between addressing safety concerns and helping former prisoners realize their potential. Another bill that we'd like to see move out of committee is House Bill 995, which would create a pilot program for red tape reduction. It would aim to reduce regulations in the Board of Probation and Parole and the Bureau of Professional and Occupational Affairs by 25%. At the conclusion of the pilot program, the state will assess the outcomes and make recommendations to expand the program across other executive branch agencies. The regulatory reduction pilot program, along with the required assessment of current regulations, would be an enormous accomplishment for our state. We believe that improving the regulatory culture of the state is key to unleashing our potential and maximizing prosperity for all Pennsylvanians. We also support House Bill 785 because this legislation would ensure that our state's public employees are fully aware of their First Amendment rights to join or refrain from joining a union, that neither Pennsylvania government employers nor public unions impede upon this right. If enacted, this bill would require government employers to annually inform non-union members, public employees, all new employees, and all employees returning from absence of their right to refrain from joining a union or paying dues as a condition of public service in Pennsylvania. So this June, while legislators are talking about the budget and making plans for summer vacation, after session ends, make sure your legislators are also talking to their leadership and the committee chairs that hold these bills. I'm Anna McCausland, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania and on Facebook at facebook.com/fightback.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJAS-AM in Pittsburgh, WGGY-FM and WGGI-FM in Pittston, along with WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.